Okay, well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the House Transportation Finance and Policy Division meeting for today. I am the chair, Frank Hornstein, and would like to welcome everybody. And we will go over here the agenda and just a few procedures as well. This is historic. This is our first House Transportation Zoom meeting. We've had several meetings on the phone, but this is the first time we've tried Zoom. So because of that, we just want to remind people that if you have questions or want to be recognized, please use the raise your hand function. I will do my best to track that, and I have some staff that will help out as well if I miss you. So again, use that raise your hand function. And then the House Public Information Services is telling us that there's that 27-second lag, so try not to watch online as our proceedings are moving along. And I did want to just give a little bit of context for our hearing today. It is informational only. We are going to hear from the department, the DVS, Department of Public Safety, DVS, Driver and Vehicle Services, to give us an update on their activities related to the driver's test backlog. This has been an important issue. It has been around for quite a while, even before the COVID crisis. It's been exacerbated since the COVID crisis. And we have many members on both sides of the aisle that have been hearing from constituents and are very interested in ways in which we can resolve this problem and this challenge. So we've organized this informational hearing to hear from DVS. We will also hear from the public. Basically, what we're going to be doing is having the presentation from DVS for about the first 20 minutes or so of the hearing. So about a little after 1 o'clock, we'll revert back at 1:10 or so. We'll revert to member questions and then do that for just under an hour or so till about 5 to 2. And then spend the last 20 minutes with about 5 or 6 members of the public who wish to testify before the committee. I also want to welcome several senators who are listening in, and they can feel free to ask questions as well and participate, even though this is a House meeting. I want to involve our Senate leadership, Senator Housley, Senator Newman, and others, Senator Dibble, Senator Jasinski, because we have worked very well collaboratively with the four major caucuses on transportation issues. I think we've done something like 4 or 5 different bills since the COVID crisis started. We have a working group that, again, consists of the transportation leadership of the House and Senate Democrats and Senate and House Republican leaders. And we view this hearing as very important as a way to all get up to speed together and inform any legislation that may need to happen as a result of this hearing. So again, with much appreciation for everybody that's joined us, we do have a quorum. We will not be taking votes. We will not be hearing bills today. This is an informational hearing only. So with that, members, I want to call on the Driver and Vehicle Services Division of the Department of Public Safety, who will give us an update on their plan to address CDL and Class D road test backlogs. I understand we have Tim Lino and Emma Corey. Mr. Lino is the Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, and Ms. Corey is the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services, and we really appreciate very much your being with us today. So I will, I'm not sure again if it's Mr. Lino or Ms. Corey that wants to start off, but again, members, we'll have testimony till about 1:10 or so, and then we'll start member questions. So with that, Mr. Lino and Ms. Corey.
Thank you, Chair and members, for having myself and Director Corey here today. My name is Tim Lino, and I am an Assistant Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. As part of my responsibilities, I oversee driver and vehicle services. I want to start by thanking everyone here for the work done last session already in this special session. I also want to call out the exceptional work of you, Chair Hornstein, and Senate Chair Newman. Thanks to your hard work and the dedication of your legislature, or our legislature, I'm sorry, Minnesotans now have an extended driver's license renewal time. They can now renew standard Class D driver's licenses online, have an easier time applying for a real ID, and those with an enhanced driver's license have an easier time proving that their card is actually real ID compliant. As everyone here knows, the issue of Class D behind-the-wheel exams was a popular topic of discussion before COVID-19. Closing all of our locations was necessary to protect the public and our staff, but did create a backlog of demand as we had to cancel thousands of Class D exams. DVS created a plan which factors in canceled tests due to COVID. It included the 2020 summer demand and accounts for fail rates for all exams. This projection shows an anticipated 81,500 Class D road tests, which will need to occur between June 1 and October 31, 2020. Director Corey will provide more details on the plan that we are confident will grow our capacity to meet the need of all Minnesotans. We do understand how this plan is not without its own issues. Reducing locations from 93 exam stations to 14 created longer drive times for some, and especially for those in greater Minnesota. I believe that once you hear the results of this reduction, you'll understand this is a necessary and temporary decision which needed to be made. DVS created this plan to address this backlog in the most efficient and safest way possible. We have already implemented many factors of this plan and have seen impressive results, and we will continue to focus on making adjustments where needed. We are hopeful that with your assistance, we can continue to improve and to better serve all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Assistant Commissioner Lino. Again, members will have questions at about 1:10. I don't know if you're muted still, Mr. Lino. Okay. Well, Mr. Howe, is there an issue here? Okay. I will call on Ms. Corey then. I believe she is also on the agenda here. I want to let members know that, again, the DVS plan was sent out to you. It's also, you can also access it on the Transportation Committee webpage for members of the public. Ms. Corey, I believe you're next here, next up.
Yes, thank you, Chair Hornstein. Thank you, members. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today, and I am, my name is Emma Corey, and I am the DVS director. I want to talk through my testimony in three parts, and that is, firstly, our recognition of you as legislators, as leaders that have been walking this path with us as we develop this plan. Secondly, I want to acknowledge to you that you are seeing and meeting a DVS that is in transition, a DVS that is committed to change, a DVS that is working hard, that is committed to serving Minnesotans and achieving success with this backlog. And thirdly, I want to talk about actual numbers, actual progress, actual steps taken since we have begun this conversation, and steps that we are taking with expressed timeline in the days ahead. So I start with the recognition. Chair Hornstein, as well as Chair Senator Newman, Senator Dibble, when I think about Representative Bernardi, Representative Tapke, when I think about when we think about some of our legislators that have pushed us, that have asked the hard questions, Senator Housley, Representative Runbeck, your questions are making us stronger. Your suggestions, what I appreciate most is that your feedback is coming with specific intentional, well-thought-out feedback. Almost, I would say, in the feedback received in the last 2 weeks, I would say 60% of that feedback is now a part of our plan moving forward. And I hope to be able to demonstrate that in the next couple of days, as well as Representative Torkelson. You have come to the table with some suggestions and ideas. That too is things that we are considering, and I'll outline it late in a few minutes. The acknowledgement of us, DVS, in transition. In the last several months, and most importantly, in the last few weeks, since COVID has been front and center for us, we have been very deliberate about looking at our duties, looking at our service delivery model, looking at our staffing, and planning based on a certain philosophy. And that philosophy has been, first, the health and safety of our customers, the health and safety of our staff. And second, we have talked about the efficiencies, the productivity, and then third comes everything else. If you notice, we have tried to be very true to that philosophy in all of our decision making. I want to go into the plan for a minute here. When we decided on those 14 locations, down from 93, I will say about 23 to 27 locations are more like hubs. The rest are all satellite stations. We might be at your location once a week. We might be at your location once a month. We might be at your location 3 times a week. So there is that gamut of locations. But nevertheless, when we closed down 93 down to 14, I understand that is a pain for International Falls. I know that that is a pain for Roseau. I know that that is a pain for some of the corners of our state. We chose those 14 locations very, very strategically, intentionally, with feedback from staff, with data that talks about our numbers and how many we serve in each of those locations. And if you notice, we tried to keep it in every corner of the state. Why did we go to 14 locations? In the midst of COVID, where there is both tensions that are real, but also emotional and mental and worries and anxiety with staff and customers, it was going to be clearly much easier and much more efficient for us to absolutely airtight safeguard 14 locations when it came to sanitization, when it came to health screening, when it came to doing those tests in a safe way for both customers and staff. So health and safety was top of mind when we said 14 locations, we are not going to let a COVID outbreak, come in the middle of this. Second, we did that for efficiency sakes. When we consolidated a reduced staffing level to 14 locations where I might have only 3 examiners running an entire day station, I am now talking maybe 6 or 9 examiners with one set of screeners at the door, with one set of folks working on our virtual lobby, with one set of folks that are managing our counter. We came up with an efficiency that is absolutely clearly proven. I want to go into the demonstration for just a minute, and I'll go back and forth with both. When we look at this specific exact timeline last year, we were at an average of 550 tests. Right now, as of this morning, we are at an average of about 707 tests a day. 707 tests a day. If I look at my numbers as of this morning, we have, out of our 19,041 canceled tests, if I look at the number of tests that have been given in the last few days, and that's about 18 days approximately, we have done 10,515 Class D tests. 10,515 Class D tests. That is, DBS examiners have been in and out of 10,515 customer cars in the past 18 days. So I think the decision of the 14 locations is proving to be right for this moment in time, when we are still not out of the woods of a public health emergency. Is this the right model for the long haul? No. It is the right model for right now. We have a set of phase, the next phase already planned and thought through, again, based on data, again, based on demand, again, based on population and availability of staff. We are currently producing and able to do more tests with less staff because of the consolidation. The next piece that I would say at this time is I want to go back to the recognition with your leadership, Chair Hornstein, Senator Newman, with all of the names that I just mentioned. You helped us get that online renewal for standard IDs. We have hardly had 12, I think it's been like maybe 12 days to 14. That's just calendar days, so even fewer working days. But I look at calendar days because it's online. We have done 25,510 Class D standard renewals in the last few days since it went live on June 2nd. That is 25,510 people less in one of our 14 locations, completely because of your help, because of your commitment, because of your ability to pass that across the aisles. As a citizen, I am very, very proud of the legislators that I am working with. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for your confidence. Thank you for your support. As we go on, I want to continue to say there are several points that are in that plan. I want to focus on our pain points. I want to focus on what you can still help us this special session between now and Friday. That is tomorrow. I realize it's Friday. But I know that you can help us with this. Our two highest inefficiencies. Our two highest inefficiencies are fail rates and no-shows. No-shows, we have 26,000 Minnesotans that do not show up for their driver's test, their road test. This is a mix of Class D and CDL. For Class D, we are talking 20 minutes. For a CDL, we are talking about a 90-minute gap for an examiner. When we had walk-ins at our locations, it was easier for us to plug in the no-shows. We had a line. You've seen a demonstration of this. We had a line of walk-ins waiting for a test. When we had a no-show, we could plug them in. Right now, because of COVID concerns, we are not entertaining walk-ins. We are looking at an electronic option, but we are not taking in-person walk-ins. That means, and even though the no-show rates are lower, our pain point is higher because we cannot plug those gaps with the walk-ins. So the no-show fee that Representative Bernardi, Chair Hornstein are trying to move forward is a reminder to Minnesotans that they must show up and they must come prepared. When I talk about coming prepared, we have Minnesotans that come in and take the test once, twice, three times, five times, eight times. I am often unable to plan based on demand because I do not know if that one candidate that I am factoring in is a one person pass the first time or an eight person retest pass, you know, a seventh person, because I know we stop at seven. And so, again, important to know that those two pieces, how can we look at those retests, and how can we look at options there? So I know that there are examples that are coming forward. We have talked about potentially in the future, you know, driver's ed all the way to age 20. It's not something that's come up yet, but my team is working on ideas for you. There are ideas that are coming to us from our representatives, from our legislators, from our senators. All of those ideas, I want to assure you, are being looked at my team right now. I want to go on to say knowledge tests. When you saw that first day of DVS reopening, that day, the lines that you saw on every news channel was not for road tests. Those lines were for knowledge tests, because we were not even doing road tests on that day. We started road tests a week into coming back and getting settled in with our processes and procedures for COVID. And so when we talk about that knowledge test, our biggest locations at the current time are able to do maybe four or five knowledge tests at a time, because we are spacing out stations for distancing. We are highly inefficient. In our smallest locations like Wilmer, we can barely fit in two people at a time, because we are not, and we will not compromise safety. We will not compromise safety for staff or for our customers. The online knowledge test that is in front of you to help us pass is something that will help us keep Minnesotans out of our 14 locations and doing more transactions, road tests, as well as provide them to those that absolutely need them. The online knowledge test will allow correctional facilities that are already our certified partners to conduct permit tests for inmates that are ready or close to being released. They will walk out with their permit, with a better lifeline and a chance at getting that apartment, getting that job, getting that back to society, not being in that circle of, you know, coming back. So I hope some of these numbers, these are very few of the numbers that I have in front of me right now. My staff are working hard. I want to just end by saying that there is a staff in our Arden Hills location. Her name is Christina Primo. She is our highest performer, a young four-year employee with the state. She has done 300, this is a young mom. She has done 366 tests. That is 366 trips in and out of customers' cars in the last 18 working days in order to be one of our highest achievers when it comes to Class D tests. My team is working hard. We are listening. Are we short of your expectations of us? Yes, maybe. I'm certain there are many places that we can do better. But I want you to know that we are looking at ideas that are coming from you. We are looking at ideas like changes to our test, parallel parking and 90-degree backing. They both do a certain they test a similar skill. Perhaps we are thinking about July 1st, not doing parallel parking. That came from you as ideas. That came from the public. That came from a testimony right on your legislative page. These are things that we are taking. We're looking at timelines immediately. We are looking at the potential of Greater Minnesota folks being able to get an appointment so that they don't come in 2 hours and are disappointed because Wilmer can only do two tests at a time. We are putting ourselves in your shoes. Minnesota, we care. Our examiners, our counter staff, our leaders, our teamwork in DVS. We are a team in transition, but we are working hard. I'll stop there and take questions.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Corey. We appreciate your testimony, and I already have a couple of hands up. Again, members, please use your hands function. Lots of hands going up now. And I will call on you in the order that I see your hands. So first we have Representative Cagle, followed by Representative Hausman. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question was about the online testing. I know when I did my snowmobile endorsement, I was able to do it from my home. And although I'm a big believer in the fact that if you don't know the answer, you should be able to, you know, go somewhere to find it. When you're in a car, I don't think that's really the situation. And so I was just kind of curious about how the online testing will work. Where will they be taken? Is it something that's going to be an open book, or are we expecting, you know, the test takers to actually have that knowledge on hand?
Absolutely, Representative Cagle, thank you for the question. Yes, when we start with the online test, if we are able to move forward, we will be able to put this in place within 6 to 8 weeks. Within 6 to 8 weeks, our high school driver education programs and our correctional facilities will be able to offer this test in English, Hmong, Spanish, and Somali. In about 8 weeks, we will be able to do it with those languages. And what that will do is these will be proctored tests. These are tests that will be done by partners that we work with right now. But I do want to share a window into what is potentially the future. We are looking at the possibility of down the road, looking at community partners, our deputy registrars, our maybe commercial driving schools. There is an endless amount of possibilities. We want to do the next 3 months with our currently certified partners, and at the 6 month point, look at the potential of perhaps doing this. Here are the potential models. DVS itself could open up the armory in St. Paul and in Minneapolis, and we could offer with a few staff a proctored test for many folks. As COVID gets released, we're watching those trends. So the possibilities are immense. There is also a feature that we are planning to purchase if we get what we have asked for, and that is a parent proctored test. We will not go there. We are not ready to go there yet, but that capability will be available to us the minute we move forward. We will plan that next step, and we will plan that with you alongside.
Okay, thank you. Any follow-up, Representative Cagle?
I also have a question about removing parallel parking. I'm not so sure about that, because there's still lots of places where you have to be able to parallel park, and not all cars have the button that you can push and it'll do it for you. So I'm just kind of curious about the thought process behind that, and if then we're going to see a lot of people who aren't able to do it.
Absolutely.
Ms. Corey.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Cagle. Again, I absolutely agree. When I remember several years ago, after we were married, we were in an apartment, and if I didn't know how to parallel park, that would have been a problem at that point. And so, you're absolutely right. But what we are here, our plan is very informed by our staff in the field. And so what I'm hearing from my staff in the field is, when you think about the 90-degree backing and you think about the skill needed to do that, and the skill needed to do parallel parking. Yes, not exactly the same, but you're testing similar skills. And so those are some of the thought processes behind this. You can be assured we will talk through it. We will talk through with partners. I would be willing to hear, to talk with you some more too as we approach that. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Representative Hausman, and then followed by Representative Runbeck. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to talk about the two things that you referenced as two very large inefficiencies, because some of this backlog, I think, is caused by participants. And you mentioned the number of failed tests, three or more, and you mentioned the number of no-shows on appointments. I'm wondering if we have a historic comparison. Do you have some numbers from 5 or 10 years ago to know, are those two problems getting worse, the number of failed tests and the number of no-shows?
So,
Ms. Gorey.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hausman, thank you for the question, because actually I wouldn't even have to dig that far back. So I think with our active communication and the media and social media, even from pre-COVID and post-COVID, we are seeing an amazing shift in no-shows. We are down to 10% no-shows in our current 18-day working days post-COVID. So the role of education, the role of communication, the role of our system. So we have, it's not in the distant past, but I tend not to speak to it because it seems like we implemented that so long ago. And Representative Bernardi reminds me often, you know, your system has change the way we schedule and also for no-shows. So as we implemented Fast DS, just about a year and a half ago, we have a system that is almost a smart scheduler. So when you, in the past, you could have 2, 3, 4 appointments set up knowing that you are, you're not sure if you're going to pass or fail. So you come in, if you pass that time, you don't bother to cancel the rest. We take care of that right now. If you set up a second appointment, the system will automatically cancel any other appointments that you have. For example, if you got an earlier appointment, of course we want you to take it, but just in case you forget, we won't. We will cancel that for you. 3 days before, you get an email that tells you, just like your dentist, you have an appointment on so-and-so date at Arden Hills or at Plymouth. Please show up. Here's what you need to do. If you, you get a text, we heard, well, a lot of people are not looking at their emails. We need texts. Well, we have now instituted texts. It does have a cost involved, but it is a cost that is still cheaper than the cost of no-shows. We have that implemented. So there are several things that we are already doing to limit that. So trending, yes. The trend for both no-shows and for fail rates is clearly uniquely down pre and post COVID.
And I guess I'm thinking, thank you, Mr. Chair, just a follow up. I was thinking of a different kind of comparison. So you're telling about how much better they're getting, but let's say 10 years ago, did we have this many people failing tests? 10 years ago, did we have that many no-shows?
It's a number we would have to research. That is absolutely easily, I don't know if I should say easily for my staff, but we will pull some of that historical information for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck, followed by Representative Mason. Representative Runbeck.
Representative Runbeck, you're probably muted.
I see the little drop down. Okay.
There you go.
All right.
Welcome, Representative Runbeck.
All right. Thanks, Senator Chair. And Ms. Gorey, thank you so much. I mean, I think you guys have really demonstrated a lot of great work and have taken this problem very seriously. So I appreciate that. And well, a few things. The issue of the number of examiners, I guess, seems like we have a very finite number. And I'm just curious if in the budget request for 2021, was there a request for money for more examiners? Because that just seems to be a budgetary, ceiling that doesn't seem to make too much sense.
Absolutely. So, Representative Runbeck, Chair Hornstein, we are operating, when you look at the number of tests that we do, we are trying to do that number of tests with 117 examiners. Yes, we did ask for staff for one additional exam station, but we are still talking about an increase in a complement of 11, which is not all examiners. And so, yes, it did include it. We did not get all that we were hoping for. I hope to come back for the next session with a plan that demonstrates to you what we as DVS are capable of with staffing levels at least maybe perhaps three different points. So short answer to your question, yes, we got an increase in exam staff, and I will clarify to give you the exact number, but I think it was close to 11 people, and that was not all examiners. So yes, we increased that number. We are, it is an intense process to bring in examiners because we are, it is a 3-month process to make sure that they are coming in, doing the classroom, doing the road, and then doing the mentoring side by side. I am appreciative of my team that takes that training in very seriously. So hopefully that answers that first question.
Representative Runbeck, do you have a follow-up?
I do have a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Corey. On the matter of, the numbers look better and better. When I spoke to Katie Knutson not even two weeks ago, she said the daily output of tests was 600. Mm-hmm. So, this is ramping up very, very well. At the same time, I think she and others agree that summertime is the peak season. And most businesses adjust and do things differently in their most busy season. So, yes, you've increased hours some, but at what point would you look at, extending even those hours into the evening, extending the Saturday hours? It seems like that more could be done.
Absolutely. Representative Runbeck, again, thank you for your specific role in supporting creativity and offering ideas. Again, as I said, you offered specific ideas, and for that, that is a relationship, that's a partnership that I absolutely appreciate and will honor and continue to partner with you. So when I think about extended hours, what we have already in our plan is that we will continue the 2 hours, extra hours right now on both sides of the day from 7 to 5:30 at all 14 locations through October 31st. What we are adding is starting this Saturday, and that is 2 days from now, Plymouth, Eagan, and Arden Hills will be open 8 to noon at each of those locations. When it comes to July 13th, we are intending to move to having at least one Saturday each month in all of the other 11 locations so that we are not for a minute. I'm very cognizant of Greater Minnesota and our customers in Greater Minnesota. It is not lost on me when I hear, I had the opportunity to talk with Jason. I hope he is on the call today, but I took some notes from him. He had some comments. He's with the League of Greater Minnesota Cities. And he said, Emma, a lot of these locations did not know y'all were opening. And I said, that's not okay. We will get a letter. There's a letter that's going out today in response to my conversation with him to all the locations that have not been open, saying, here is our, we may not have answers. We do not know when your location will open because of this, this, and this reason, but you have our commitment that we will be in touch with you, that we will communicate with you. You know, he has talked about the distance between Roseau and our, you know, the distance that folks are traveling right now. It is not lost on me. But again, we are talking with customers in those areas, with staff in those areas. Staff are telling us, yes, they are not happy about driving, but they are thanking us for being open. They are thanking us for not allowing us to come in without a temperature check. They are thanking us for the virtual lobby that allows us to come and scan a QR code and then go sit in our car and not be bunched up outside our doors. We are thinking about staff and we're thinking about customers. When my staff see a line that is wrapped around my building, do you think they can give their best? They are stressed. The virtual lobby thinks about that. The virtual lobby allows a customer to check in and go and sit in their car and know that they are not forgotten. It helps customers. It helps staff. DVS is working intentionally, working hard, listening to stakeholders, listening to critics, listening to customers that are frustrated, and incorporating their feedback into our solutions.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck, did you have one more question?
Just one comment. I'll let others go with their questions, but I guess I'm still a little bit puzzled why the hours aren't extended. I mean, most people do business all day Saturday, and why wouldn't that be possible? So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Runbeck. We have Representative Mason and then Representative Torkelson after that. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is for Ms. Corey. Just a follow-up on the incredible numbers of no-shows and failures. Before you shut down for COVID, were you doing reminders as well before then?
Yes. For about, it is in the past, since I came on board. So I know that it has been since after September of last year that we have instituted the emails and the text reminders. I mean, the text reminders have been more recent.
Okay. I just find that just astounding. And then as far as the failures, and I know many of our schools no longer do the driver testing, which is the way that I went through it, you did that, and you know you are ready to go when you turn 16. So is that part of the problem? And we did have some letters that I thought were interesting about the failures for immigrants as well, and the lack of maybe communication because their English might not be as good as it could be to understand. So how are you thinking of addressing that? Because again, those are, I mean, to go, as you pointed out, I mean, the fact that so many people have failures and it's more than one or two, there's a problem someplace. So what do you have any suggestions going forward?
Ms. Corey.
Chair Hornstein, thank you. Representative Mason, thank you for your thoughtful question, Representative. You are absolutely right. I will start by saying that DVS is committed to serving One Minnesota. We are keeping those kinds of decisions front and center when we shape our solutions. We are intent to serve those without access, with limited access, with all the access. And those things make, you know, for example, if I needed to institute the online test, we could do that in 6 weeks, maybe 5 weeks or 4 weeks with just English. But our focus has been on all the languages that are important to Minnesotans. And that's why I tell you a timeline that gives me those languages. When you talk about our richness in Minnesota is the strength that immigrants bring, I am proud to say that I am an immigrant from India. And I have, at this point, lived almost half my life in India and half my life here in the U.S. And so when it comes to our immigrants, we are able to, with not much of a shift, we are able to serve those communities and serve them in a way that is actually impactful. So, answer to your question. What we are thinking about doing is we are thinking about partnering with our deed partners. There are deed partners that pay millions of dollars on workforce readiness. Why can't some of those dollars go to driver ed? You know, why can't that be part of the solution? So I am, it is on my radar to talk with Commissioner Grove and see how might we partner. One good step forward might be the online test is provided at the Urban Leagues and the Clues and the, you know, Mercado Central and at locations where the communities populate, and that they can see that DVS cares. We are talking about a post-conference at the end of your test. We have talked about examiners taking the time, even though time is tight. We are telling examiners, if you have a fail, take that extra 5 minutes, ask the instructor to come. If there is a language issue, have the instructor come or the parent come and listen to your feedback to the candidate, because the candidate is bummed they just failed. They're not hearing you. So talk to the accompanying adult or instructor and tell them what failed them. So we care enough to come up with solutions that will and are making a difference.
Hey, thank you. And so we have several more members have raised their hand. We have Representative Torkelson followed by Representative Joachim. Representative Torkelson.
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Yes, hear you and see you.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, for having this hearing. I appreciate it. We've been trying for a while to get it shoehorned in. Thanks for your flexibility on getting that done. I'd also like to thank the senators that have joined us welcome them. They're doing a little slumming today down in the House Representatives environs, even though it's virtual. I think that's good. I think it's good when we hear the same information and hear the questions answered in the same way. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Lanao and Director Corey for being with us and facing the music, so to speak. I'm going to start out with a question regarding the Brainerd situation. You know, I know originally Brainerd was on your list. There was an incident there that caused you to need to close that office. I'm not arguing with that. But it seems to me that there's been no effort to really refill that gap in the map. And that has resulted in some folks driving a long, long way to get these services. Can you explain to me what happened there and how you intend to address that gap?
Absolutely, Representative Torkelson. Chair Hornstein, thank you. Yes, Brainerd was on our list for a first phase, a second phase station. There was a city hall fire, and that was on that first day. We were supposed to begin to run road tests the next day. It is one of our lightly staffed stations. And so since that time, at that point, we did close immediately because of, smoke odors and things like that. And we redeployed those staff, one to Duluth because they were supporting someone who was going to be going out on military leave, and then a second examiner that was going to St. Cloud to support the efforts in St. Cloud. That was already making a difference to the St. Cloud location. So with those two examiners out of the equation, Brainerd now becomes a highly inefficient location for us to open up. Is it on our radar because it is such a highly populated and high performing location? Yes. But is it one that we are able to open at the current time? No. And what I would say to that is, as as my report says, right now we have only about a third of our appointments open. The reason why we have only a third of our appointments open and we are having that frustration from the public saying that, you know, I cannot see anything open for the next 6 months. Well, two thirds are still open, but that doesn't help the public. The public doesn't know that, and neither do you. So what we are doing now is we are moving to a model that goes to opening up 50%, but maybe even 70% by next week of the appointments. This is a good time to set up appointments. So opening up 50 to 70% of our appointments. I'll go back to the Brainerd example. So our inability to open up those extra appointments is purely based on staff availability and potential COVID trends moving forward, the potential of having, you know, later needing to cancel events or cancel tests. So when it comes to making that decision about 14 and in this plan now committing to the 14 between now and Labor Day, it allows my supervisors to now know what their staffing is. I know I'm working with 19 or 9, or I know I'm working with 3. And they can open up 70% appointments without thinking twice. They are, we are being more efficient. So I ask for your understanding. I ask for your ideas. I don't think we are closed. You know, I have staff that are monitoring the situation right now. There are some locations that we might need to reconsider. I would be open to that conversation.
Representative Torkelson.
Yes, thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you for that answer. But really what I'm very concerned about is citizens that have to drive 2 hours to get an appointment. And you mentioned earlier that part of your concerns here are the COVID-related risks. But when you have people driving across the state multiple hours and spending multiple hours in a community that they're not a resident of, it seems to me we're adding to that COVID risk, plus inconveniencing these folks a great deal. I don't know why it's impossible to get some, at least to part-time offices open in some of these far-reaching corners of the state. It just seems out of sight. I'll leave that topic, but the next topic I'd like to hear more about is the backlog. Can we be confident that this backlog is surmountable? We talk about if we would go ahead with online testing, it seems to me that would add more people to the queue that need that driver's test, and does that threaten our ability to get this backlog taken care of? As I look at the numbers, they look pretty darn tight to get caught up by the 31st. Can you do it? Will it happen?
Ms. Corey.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, Representative Torkelson. So again, I will say that what I have outlined in this plan, we will deliver. We will deliver for you. We will deliver for Minnesota. We might over-deliver. We will not under-deliver on this plan. So this plan is taking into control, and taking into consideration actual tests canceled. So if you look at actual, just let's take Class D. We're not talking CDL. We're not talking motorcycle. We're not talking knowledge tests or transactions, because we do all of that as well. But if we take just Class D, real-time tests canceled was 19,000. We are saying let's go with the percentage of retests that we usually have, 28% under 18 usually retest at least once, 49% over 18 retest at least once. Using those factors, we have said, okay, let's add 6,900 right away to that total and say at the minimum we need the 19,000 actual canceled plus the 6,900. Then we looked at actual demand, not in the winter months, not in the fall months, in exactly the same months last year. And we looked at that, those numbers projected for this year. And not just that, we added retest, the retest percentage to that number. So the 81,478 that I outline in this plan is more than planning for retests and summer demand. Now, am I worried about staffing? Am I worried about COVID? I am terrified about COVID. You know, my staff are the most important thing to me. The customers that come in our doors are the most important thing to me. But is this plan based on what we are doing right now and what we are foreseeing being able to do? The answer would be yes.
Okay. Representative Torkelson, do you have an additional question?
If I could just touch on one other topic, and that is the topic of the potential for a fine if for no-shows and the revenue that's generated and how that I'm a little concerned about that, and what's the plan for the revenue should we actually take that step?
Ms. Corey.
Chair Hornstein, Representative Torkelson, I do believe that is the right thing to do right now. The late fee, I say this very transparently, it is not so much about the late fee as the statement, as the message. The message to Minnesotans that if we want a system that works, you have a DVS that is dedicated to transitioning to a new DVS, but we cannot do this without you. We demand that you walk the journey with us. This is a step in that direction.
Okay, we have Representative Joachim and Representative Petersburg, and then shortly after that, we're going to pivot to public testimony, again, about 10 or 5 to 2 o'clock. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think a few other people kind of touched on this, but Ms. Corey, did I hear you right and say that 29% of those under 18 have a failure rate the first time, and over 49% of those over 18. Mm-hmm. Have those numbers greatly climbed over the last few years? I mean, I could make some assumptions. I think back to when our youngest took his test 4 years ago, and we went through driver's training, and at that time it was about $200, $225, and some schools were still offering it, but Community Ed offers it, and it's just about the same. Now I looked on the website, Safeway's at 390, Capital Driving's at 350, Community Ed's at 389. It makes me wonder if because there's the rising cost of those doing the driver's ed before 18 has now pushed folks to waiting until after 18 when they don't have to take driver's tests. Is that something that's, I'm not sure what we can do about it, but is that something that you're seeing it's exacerbating the situation as well?
Ms. Corey.
Chair Hornstein, Representative Joachim, you've put your finger on that spot, and you're right. Driver's Ed is making a difference for those under 18. Are there folks that are waiting? It's a double-edged sword. There are folks that cannot afford. You and I might be able to afford that driver's ed. There are folks that may not be able to afford that driver's ed. Does driver's ed play a vital role in pass rates? The answer is yes. And that's why I talk about the deed alternatives and the options there and potential ideas for making driver's ed more available, more accessible, more, equitable. And, but those have been, there is a clear demarcation between under 18 and over 18. Magically at over 18, you do not need to have driver's ed.
Mr. Chair,
do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, just quick follow-up. Thank you, and thank you for talking about the equity piece, because I am truly concerned about that and accessibility. What we are seeing, though, is because of those rising costs, it's hard to get to driver's ed. Kids are pushing it off because of the cost, and we're also seeing our services get strained and our staffing and time and money budgets get strained because of it. So that may be something we have to dig into next session.
I agree.
Thank you.
I would be.
Go ahead, Ms. Corey. Did you want to say? Okay. Thank you. Okay. Our last member on the list is Representative Petersburg. So if anyone wants to ask a question, please raise your hand now, and we'll have Representative Petersburg proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one kind of gets back to the idea of what we're doing with the timing of our open slots as well as the no-shows. Now, I know that in the past there had been a policy of reserving some of the slots for driver's education businesses and so forth that we no longer are doing, and I'm wondering if that was one of the reasons why it dropped from 26 or whatever it was to what it is now. And the other piece for us to consider is when there was a perception out there of lack of dependability, oftentimes I think people might get one spot reserved in one town, another spot later in case their child didn't pass the other one. Are we doing a good job of connecting from one district to the other or one office to the other so that they get canceled if they get passed another one? And will that help with this idea? Because otherwise, by holding slots open that we may or may not use later and we're not dealing with as much walk-ins, we're just kind of exacerbating the reduction of spots available. So that's a comment that I'm wondering if there might be, Ms. Corey might choose to talk about.
Ms. Corey.
Chair Hornstein, Representative Petersburg, I can't, I was distracted by your background, that awesome building. I had the opportunity to work in that building, and what an awesome backdrop, by the way. And so to your question, absolutely. The FAST system is allowing us to keep track of all of those pieces. So in the past, you're absolutely right. There was even to the next step, which is, yes, Junior was setting up an appointment here and an appointment there, but Mom and Dad were setting up appointments. And so when Junior passed, all these other appointments, maybe in several locations, might have been no-shows. The system, regardless, it is seamless for all our exam stations. It is a smart system that cancels behind. It kicks out email reminders. It effectuates our texting reminders, and it gives me data like nothing you can believe. I mean, I have as of this time, real time number of tests as of when we started. So it is yes. Short answer is yes.
Okay, thank you. We have one last question. Chairman Newman has joined us. Chair Newman, it's so wonderful to have you with us, and appreciate so much your taking the time. And again, I'll just again thank him for his partnership. We continue to work very well together, and we met earlier this week, in fact, with our transportation leads, our working group, and appreciate his presence so much. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the members of the House Transportation Committee, thank you for allowing us to join Senator Dibble and myself. Truly appreciate it. Recognizing that I'm a guest here, I'm going to ask a question, to Ms. Corey, and it's two questions, and the answers can be fairly brief. Because I know that Chair Hornstein wants to get to some public testimony. But your plan, Ms. Corey, includes not only online knowledge testing, but it also includes third-party testing for CDLs. You have not mentioned that yet in your testimony today. Could you give us an idea of the importance of third-party testing to the successful completion of your plan? And the second question is, if third-party testing and or the online knowledge testing is not completed within this special session, given the shortness of our time, what would that have on the effectiveness of your plan? And if you could quantify it somehow in terms of you know, it'll delay you by delay us by a month or 2 months, or delay us by a certain number of testers. But just quantify it for us, if you might. Thank you, Ms. Corey.
Chair Hornstein, Chair Newman, I would be remiss if I did not say that I have always appreciated you for something very specific. On the first time when I testified in front of your committee, you sent me an email with guidance and advice that I really, really appreciated. And I'm a fan, if you did not know that. So thank you for your continued support. I want to just respond to both your points. When it comes to third-party CDL testing, yes, DVS is open. DVS is ready to walk into that arena. And I will tell you why. There is a distinct difference between CDL third-party testing and Class D third-party testing. My concerns, the concerns of my team and my leadership team and my staff and my field staff, is majorly around conflict of interest and fraud that we have seen and experienced and helped unravel in recent months and years. And so I say that we are ready for CDL third-party testing as an opportunity to try this in a way that would make us more efficient. It's because the conflict of interest is removed by virtue of our CDL federal regulations. The CDL regulations at the federal level clearly separate training and testing. It is getting to the heart of DVS's concerns with third-party testing. That allows us to go down that path. Secondly, when you talk about efficiency, if we went to CDL third-party testing, yes, it will be a pressure on us. We might begin to see gains in month two, month three, 6 months, a year down, and then into the future. Up front, it will be an investment. We will need to train, we will need to certify, we will need to continuously audit. And so, yes, but that is an area that I would like to go to, because think about it this way. One CDL test is 90 minutes. I can do 4 Class D tests in the time of one CDL and still have time left over. And so CDL third-party testing is something that we would be willing to consider. I have been working strongly and side by side with my AFSCME partners. They have been the reason. Pat Benner, is on this call, but Pat and his support and AFSCME partners have played an incredible role in allowing us to be able to do the overtime, to do the reassignments, to do the redeployments of staff. And they understand that what we are concerned about is that if CDL third party just goes through with Class D in it, that would be against what we believe to be the right thing for Minnesota at this time. CDL third party, yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Corey. Chairman Newman, did you have one follow-up, and then we'll get on to the public testimony? I know that you probably have another question.
Yeah. The question I had, or it was the second question, Ms. Corey, is if third-party testing and or the knowledge testing is not included in the special session legislation, what kind of an effect of is that going to have on your plan that you have put forward to be have all of the backlog erased by October 31st?
The biggest impact will be on the online test. If you can help us get the online tests, to just give you one statistic, as of today, we have done 19,385 knowledge tests. That is 19,385 people or visits that could have been eliminated in the last 18 working days.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Newman. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much, Chair Newman. And we will be in touch. And you know, please feel free to stick around for the public testimony, if you will. Okay, members, we're going to, we have several people who have signed up ahead of time, and I'll call them on the order that I have for them. Our first testifier is Mr. Todd Peterson, the Community Development Coordinator for the City of Roseau. And members, if you do have questions of the testifiers, we'll take them after all of the testifiers have spoken. And if you can just indicate who you'd like to address your question to, we can, but we want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to testify before the committee. Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Chair Hornstein and members of the committee, my name is Todd Peterson, and I serve as the Community Development Director for the City of Roseau. On behalf of the City of Roseau and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, I would like to testify today to express the impacts that the DVS plan to overcome a significant testing backlog by only opening a fraction of its testing centers has had on my community and other rural areas of Minnesota. In short, the current closures pose a huge issue for northern Minnesota that impacts not only our quality of life, cost of living, but also could exacerbate testing backlogs in our areas of the state, even as it advances progress in other areas. When DVS was operating all of its testing centers, Roseau was served by a part-time testing center that was staffed out of the Thief River Falls location. Today, both the Roseau and Thief River Falls locations are closed, and the nearest testing center to our community is located in Bemidji. When you look at a map, it may seem like Bemidji is well located to serve the northwest corner of the state, but the reality is much different. For us, it is a testing center is just over 130 miles away. This makes for a round trip between 4 and 5 hours. To put it in perspective, to drive from the state capital the same distance that the Roseau residents are forced to drive to the nearest testing center, you would need to drive to Mason City, Iowa. This is a huge investment in time, energy, and travel. Furthermore, individuals who are employed are forced to take time away from work to make this trip, or to escort a son or a daughter or a best friend to take a test. And for some, that's just simply not possible. For employers needing CDL drivers, this becomes a huge expense and major inconvenience to send two employees, a truck or a bus, to Bemidji for an entire day. Moreover, DVS allows for advanced reservations for road tests, but not for knowledge tests, which are first come, first serve. This means that someone seeking to take a knowledge test is asked to make that drive without knowing for certain that they'll even be able to take that test. I urge DVS and this committee to consider these changes to the plan that promote access for all regions of the state, including providing clear expectations on when communities can expect additional testing centers to reopen. And we would be open to efforts to offer more flexibility, such as expanding options for locally provided driving exams that are based on reserved advanced reservations and enhanced options for online knowledge testing to alleviate some of the burdens of having to travel these long distances for just knowledge tests. Finally, I want to urge DVS to communicate more clearly with the cities like mine, which are home to testing centers that are currently closed. In our case, city leaders have received no communication to tell us what to expect related to our local testing center. In fact, the testing center in Roseau is located in my building, and I have still never received communication about its fate. Thank you. Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, committee members.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson, and thank you also for your involvement. The Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities has been a wonderful partner with us in all things transportation. So thank you so much. Our next testifier is Derek Vetch. He's a Wright County Commissioner. Commissioner Vetch, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Derek Vetch, Wright County Commissioner. Chair Hornstein and fellow committee members, thank you. It wasn't too long ago that a person in Minnesota could get an appointment 2 weeks in advance and only need to travel 30 to 40 minutes to take a written or road test in the state. We fast forward to today, and citizens now must make an appointment 3 to 6 months in advance and now need to travel 1 to 4 hours to accomplish that same goal of getting the privilege to drive in the great state of Minnesota. I asked this committee, at what point did it become okay for us as a state agency to ask citizens to put an entire day on hold of their life to get a permit, the permit to drive a car? Testing accessibility has been a growing issue in Wright County and all over Minnesota for the past 5 years. This pandemic has only amplified this issue. Rewind to just 12 months ago, an individual reached out to me that they were complaining at the fact that they were 4 months out to get a driver's license appointment. The state's answer to this problem with the pandemic is to consolidate testing facilities in an attempt to create more efficiencies. However, these efficiencies come at a great cost to citizens of the state. I would challenge this committee to ask DPS what metrics were used to determine which testing centers were to be open. Many pieces of legislation and changes have been proposed to correct this issue. One in particular is House File 3300. This bill would have allowed counties the option to provide testing services through Deputy Register's office. It would have also been funded by allowing a small fee on testing to be assessed to accommodate the associated expenses. As the 10th largest county in the state of Minnesota, Wright County strongly asks that action be taken to improve accessibility and equity to written road tests in our county and across the state. We also ask that legislation like House File 3300 and other similar bills be considered when making corrective actions to this problem. I thank this committee for your time and your commitment to fixing this problem for the citizens of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Vetch. We really appreciate your being here and your testimony. Thank you. Next on the list is Pat Benner from the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Mr. Benner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Pat Benner, and I'm a legislative representative for AFSCME Council 5. I'm here today to offer our thoughts of support for the majority of the DBS recommendations to the legislature, as well as our endorsement of the steps DBS has already taken to make headway into the backlog of road exams. We feel that allowing Class D permit testers to take the test online would alleviate some of the demand for services at DBS testing stations and could permanently improve the amount of travel people in greater Minnesota need to do to get their driver's permit. We support the proposal to add no-show fees for license applicants, as the COVID-19 pandemic has required the department to suspend walk-in service for driver's exams. We also support the proposal to codify into statute the prohibition in reserving testing slots for driving schools. And I know that was a Senate proposal. I don't know if it was incorporated into the DBS proposal. Additionally, we'd like to remind the committee of our previous opposition to third-party testing for behind-the-wheel license exams. And that opposition does apply to the proposal to expand third-party testing for CDL road exams. We have some concerns about the cost to the taxpayers and how much they already spend out of pocket to utilize driver's education, let alone how much the tests would cost to the applicant. We have concerns about privatizing any service that pertains to public safety. We have some of the safest roads in the country, in no small part due to the state stance that driving is a privilege awarded to those that demonstrate they can handle the responsibility. Finally, we oppose the position that the solution for chronically underfunding a government service justifies its privatization. We feel that this backlog was created because driver services have been chronically underfunded, while the demographic shifts and population growth of the metro area eventually outpaced the capacity of DBS to serve Minnesota doing things the way we did before. However, we feel the recent appropriations to the department in 2019 and the plan laid out for you today and back in May will meet the demands of Minnesotans and get everyone on the road without privatizing public services. And while this proposal falls outside the scope of what we're going to talk about today, improving access to affordable driver's education would significantly improve the success rates of our young people and reduce the number of retests needed across the state. DVS presented a plan in early May to the legislature. That was the result of collaborative work between AFSCME members and the department. Our workers began implementing that plan, and today we are happy to say that the early results are promising. Our examiners had been working overtime before the COVID pandemic hit Minnesota in March, and once the governor lifted the stay-at-home order in May, we again will work overtime, both on weekdays and on Saturdays, for the foreseeable future. I won't go into too much more detail regarding all of the various changes and tweaks that have been made, but I would like to remind the committee of the context that our members have performed this work in the middle of a COVID-19 pandemic. The health impacts of the novel coronavirus are severe. As of Wednesday, June 17th, 1,325 people have died in Minnesota from COVID-19. There have been 31,296 confirmed cases, with 351 people currently hospitalized and 181 of those patients currently in the ICU. In the U.S., we have exceeded 2.1 million cases with 116,000 deaths. It is a highly contagious disease and one that we do not have a widely available treatment for nor a vaccine. The only proven way to prevent COVID-19 from spreading is to intentionally and unapologetically center health over convenience. Every step that the department has taken so far has been balanced with the health and well-being of the workers and the general public. At the point the governor gave us the go-ahead to begin administering CDL tests, the department has been responsive and proactive in centering worker safety as we strive to reduce the backlog of road exams. The department was able to perform CDL tests with a GoPro in the cab to better protect everyone involved, and then have some following cars behind. All of the exam stations that are open right now have plexiglass dividers to prevent airborne droplets from getting to the workers inside of the buildings. We have workers that are sanitizing the workstations frequently to ensure that both our staff and test takers have as small of a risk as possible of being exposed to the virus. Our examiners now skip vehicle inspections for Class D licenses and will immediately end a test if the participant fails in order to minimize the amount of time everyone needs to spend inside the confined area of a vehicle. All of these changes to procedures have not only ensured that we are minimizing health risks, but they are the key to the increased efficiency, and the workers' health is paramount to maintaining this pace and reducing the backlog. We thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I can answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you so much, Mr. Benner. Our last testifier who was signed up in advance is Mr. John Palmer, and he is representing the Minnesota Driver and Traffic Safety Education Association. I'll remind members, if you have questions of any of the testifiers, we'll have them following Mr. Palmer, or if there's anyone else who wishes to testify that I haven't called on yet that is on the call. Mr. Palmer, welcome to the committee. I see you're on the call.
Chairman Hornstein and committee members.
Welcome, Mr. Palmer. Please state your name.
I'm John Palmer, a retired professor from St. Cloud State. I'm a volunteer lobbyist for the Minnesota Driver and Traffic Safety Education Association, which are the folks that deliver instructions to novice drivers through the public school and parochial school system. To keep things brief and to the point, third-party testing nationally has served a role. It does need monitoring. The proposal that Driver and Vehicle Services has made seems reasonable. I want to reemphasize that all novice drivers are novice drivers. There isn't anything magic about turning 18. And that instruction can, in fact, by the evidence presented by Driver and Vehicle Services, increase the pass rate. I also want to mention that Minnesota, unlike many states, prohibits the administration of a knowledge or skills test for the successful completion of driver education, unlike Wisconsin that allows that. So any proposal that might involve a waiver of the test for completion of a class would essentially be waiver of all testing, since we're not permitted by rule to have a skills test. With regard to funding of driver education that I heard mentioned, that's been a subject of interest to me since I came to the state. My doctoral dissertation was titled Role and Funding of Driver Education in Minnesota. Now, I don't really want to admit that that was accepted at the University of Minnesota in 1981, but I suspect that the information is relevant today. People just haven't figured out how to pay for driver ed. People generally support it. So I'm pleased to hear DVS has some interest in working with DEET. My internet connection just said it was unstable. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'll stay on the line if members have questions. Thank you again, Chairman Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Palmer, for your testimony. And I know we have others on the call who either from DVS or the public. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify that has not had an opportunity and wishes to testify before the committee? Just simply raise your hand. And I'll also see if there's any member questions of any of the testifiers. I think all of our testifiers have remained with us, and so any members have any questions. Okay, Representative Mason, I see your hand. I don't know if that's your hand for, oh, Representative Kosnick. Okay, representatives, first we'll have Representative Mason and then Representative Kosnick. We have about 5 minutes left, so up, oh, and Representative Runbeck. So we may go a couple minutes overtime. I want to make sure that everybody gets their questions asked. Representative Mason, and then Kosnick, then Runbeck. Representative Mason.
Representative Mason, you're muted. You have to unmute yourself, please.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Okay, this has to do with the drive time to test sites. And I have to tell you, I'm originally from Ohio. When I turned 16, immediately I took my driver's test. And I was fortunate that my street was used for the testing. So whoever was doing, you know, the guy in, that was with me, he knew who I was. Even if I didn't know him, he knew me. And then, you know, I've been fortunate. I've lived in Eagan all the time. So again, that test site is 10 minutes away. I cannot fathom that we cannot do better than having people drive hours. I mean, that to me is totally unacceptable. And, you know, and I know funding is probably a paramount reason. And if not, and I know you're dealing with the COVID, but we have to do better. I mean, people should not have to drive hours, and actually, in the current situation where people are balancing a lot of things because of the COVID situation, I just figure there has to be a way we can do better than that and do it sooner than later as well.
Okay.
So that's more of a comment. Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like that was a comment, and thank you for that, Representative Mason. Representative Kosnick, and then we'll wrap up with Representative Runbeck. Representative Kosnick.
Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for following through on your commitment to address this during special session. We've got a lot going on. So initially, I probably wasn't as excited to have this informational hearing as we were during normal session. But I think it's important, and it's important to recognize a lot of what's been said today, while very valuable, isn't necessarily new. But I think we're drawing towards more consensus. It's great to have some of the senators here, and they were working on a little bit more robust bill than what we had, and I certainly understand the differences. But Director Corey, I appreciate the plan that you've submitted and a lot of the additional ideas that require legislative action. I think, you know, we're pretty close, and with the Representative Joachim brings up some interesting issues that I think we can try to work through, recognizing that essentially we have a duty to provide a basic service to our constituents across the state. The gentleman from Roseau, I appreciate your concerns, but I'll have you know, as a suburban legislator, we've got constituents that are driving to Grand Rapids to get testing. And certainly it is not just an outstate Minnesota issue, Director Corey. I think my comments that I made during legislative session were quite strong and direct, and I feel that they've been heard. I appreciate the efforts that you're making. And so, Mr. Chair, I just appreciate the hearing and know that our members that, you know, I think we're pretty close on this. The biggest sticking thing probably is the third-party testing. And Mr. Palmer gave some testimony that maybe that's something that we can work through. I recognize our friends that asked me if that's kind of the barrier, you know, kind of a union thing, if there's something that we can work through, Mr. Benner. But I understand those issues as well. So I think we're close, but apparent, you know, the public needs to know that a lot of the issues that we've discussed today, some of the solutions we offered as amendments during session, Mr. Chair. And now we certainly recognize, because the COVID impact has exacerbated the problem that was already there. And so I would hope that we can continue to make some progress. And I just wanted to make those comments that I think we can, we're kind of close to working some of this stuff out, but doesn't quite cut it. But I appreciate the efforts, continued efforts of both the members and Director Corey. But our constituents, we deserve, this is a basic function of government to just provide a license to ride on, drive on our roads, and safety is should be the paramount purpose of that. And so I think we need to continue to strive to deliver that basic function.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Thanks for your involvement in this issue as well. Our last member comment or question comes from Representative Runbeck. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And I would echo the comments of Representative Mason and Representative Kosnick. I mean, they were probably more final comments than mine. I agree with them both heartily. I do think that it feels to me like the numbers are going to be hard to make, Ms. Corey. So I am hopeful, Mr. Chair, that we would be able to have a follow-up hearing 4 weeks down the road, 6 weeks down the road, something like that. I think we need to be on top of it. I mean, it's the public's expecting a lot, and we need to do our part. So if you could help us with that, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Well, Representative Runbeck, that was a great transition to what I wanted to say at the end. So thank you for that. I first of all want to thank all of the members and those from the public, the folks from DVS and DPS that have been here today. Many thanks to all of you for making this hearing a success. And Representative Runbeck, you've hit the nail on the head. You know, I think that Senator Newman and Representative Torkelson and Senator Dibble and I, when we huddled earlier this week, we did identify four specific policies that may be considered for possible legislation. I think three of those four are in a bill that Representative Bernardi, I think, has officially introduced. If it wasn't introduced yesterday, it'll be introduced today. And so we will continue to work together on a bipartisan and bicameral basis. And, you know, it does seem that there's likely the need for some legislative action here. And, you know, we will make sure that you know, we can meet, and certainly a bill hearing would be potentially in order. But again, we want to find, as we have done in the past successfully, you know, find those areas of common ground and then act. And you know, it seems to me that there are several areas that we can address, together with all of the different stakeholders, whether it's Greater Minnesota Cities or, DVS or the folks that work in the testing centers, and of course our constituents, the many parents that have written or called us about this issue. So, I think Representative Runbeck, yes, we will have additional hearings. We'll have likely legislation, and I think this is a really important jumping off point for that effort. And I do believe that we've had some improvements as things have gone along. Ms. Corey, I appreciate your efforts and the well-organized and informative report that you have given us. So with that, we will stay in touch. I'm going to certainly be contacting our Senate partners in very short order, and we'll evaluate this hearing. And obviously, anyone on our committee, please feel free to contact me with your ideas and questions. We will continue to move forward together. So seeing no further questions or comments or business before the committee, the House Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for today is adjourned. Thank you very much, members.